This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let they not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a fondest heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so I'll just quickly introduce myself. So my name is Bhante Chunda. I've been a monastic for probably close to 10 years. So everyone can hear me?
Okay.
Turn up a bit. Just a little bit, please.
Okay, maybe I'll speak out a bit louder.
That's why we've got a microphone.
Thank you. Okay. So as for myself, I've been in Bodhiyana for 7 years, and at the moment I'm staying in two monasteries. Yeah? So I'm staying in Bodhiyana Monastery for 6 months, then in Newbury Monastery for 6 months. So at the moment in Newbury Monastery, we're building a new monastery, and I went there to support a new community, but the leading monastic that was there got a bit overworked. Then later on, he resigned and left the monastery. So the community there was struggling a bit. So they actually asked me to support that community. So I stayed and support the community for roughly, we'd say, close to over 3 years now. And they like the Bodhiyana monks coming over, because we have a group of monastics that go there, group of three months ago there and support the community. So our main intention was to get the place set up and built, get the community stabilized, then later on come back and leave them alone to run the old monastery. But I think because with the presence of the Bodhiyana monks, we spoiled them a bit. So basically the community of monastic lay and community members basically want us to stay there permanently.
Good.
Yeah. So at the moment, myself and some monks are there building a new monastery now. So hopefully, once it's completed, we should have close to, on the master plan, up to maybe 60 people, monastic, monks, nuns and laypeople staying together. But I don't think that will happen during my time. So I'd rather do it slowly, and more organic. Because sometimes if you build things too big, sometimes they can, a new community might not be able to cope with that kind of pressure that's given. So for me, I'd rather build as required. So as the community stabilizes, then we slowly build it. Just like Bodhiyana and Dhammasara, as a small monastic, they arrive, more people train, and more people become more senior, and we expand the community slowly. So this is one of my job now, that is to support the Newbury community. Okay, so okay, so maybe this is mainly for the new people. Okay, so with the monastic life, the main thing with monastic life is to let go of our attachment. Because with being a person, a human being, we do have to work, study, and have a lot of responsibility. But sometimes when we overburden, sometimes it's good to have a break and have a rest, the rest of mind. Yep. So before I was a Buddhist, I used to like basically just look for entertainment, enjoyment, to just to escape from the busyness of as a lay person, going on holiday, going for a bushwalk. Sometimes I used to go swimming or snorkeling a lot in the cove, because when you go swimming in the ocean, you feel very peaceful and at peace. But as the work pressure builds up, and also with relationship with friends and partners, sometimes I find that even if I went bushwalk or go jogging or ride my bike, when I go back home, my mind was still very confused, and it was quite confusing. Because no matter how much I think, no matter how much I try and escape from the responsibility, I was still carrying the burden in my heart. So later on, when I learned about meditation, especially meditation, and the Buddhist teaching about the defilements of mind, our attachment to the likes and the dislike, and because of those strong attachments, sometimes not able to let go, we tend to feel very unsettled. So when I first started to learn meditation, then I realized that actually all this strong attachment can be let go and just drop temporarily. So allow the mind to rest. So when you rest the mind, one thing I find that when the mind is rested, there is a sense of peace and freedom. So people think that in the world, people think that when you're free to do whatever you want, you find a lot of happiness in that. So I tried that when I was a lay person for, 20 years, 23 years. It never brought me any happiness. It just brought me more confusing and more headache. Yep. So you look at the world these days, you see that people are always running after their likes and avoiding the dislikes. And so in the Buddhist practice, we find that there is a middle ground. The middle ground is the Eightfold Path, the middle way. So our mind is not inclined towards the likes, but also not repelled from the dislike. So the only way to understand that is to calm and still the mind. So the more we calm and the more we still the mind, the more things tends to make more sense, become more clear. Because we will exercise, we eat well, we take a lot of medicine, sometimes vitamins, become vegetarian. We think by doing that we will keep this body healthy. That's quite true. We can maintain this body to be quite healthy. But one thing is, if we take care of our own mental well-being, sometimes that becomes a very strong boost. Because when the mind becomes very calm and very peaceful, you find that things like anxiety, also slight depression, it tends to slowly fade away. Because when I was a layperson, before I learned meditation, my hands used to tremble a bit. And my eyesight wasn't that clear. So it used to be a bit blurry. And I get slight ringing in my ear. And I used to get sick quite often. So that was a lot of anxiety built up in my heart, in my mind. So I learned to understand this cause and condition and slowly let go of this tension. Later on, I found my headache went away. My health improved, my trembling left, and my hearing and my eyesight improved a lot. Because basically, a lot of the tension within this body and mind was basically released and let go. So I find that, wow, this is quite interesting. I didn't know that was possible. Yeah. But the more the scientists had done more in the meditation practice, they find that people that practice meditation quite a lot, just only 8 weeks of meditation, they find that the brain structure actually changed. There's more white matters. So when that happened, things like our heart and mind become more resilient. So when there's a lot of pressure in the family or in work or anxiety, we become more resilient and at ease. So when things go up and down, and when things go right, we don't get too carried away. We enjoy it, we don't get carried away. Well, when things go bad, we learn to become more at ease and just let it be. Realize this is part of life. Things come and go. Things happen. Everything's impermanent. So there's always cause and condition. But the most important thing is to take care of our heart and our mind. In order to do that, is to still the mind. So the more we still the mind, the more we can see things more clearly, and the more our thoughts become more clear. Okay. So that's one reason why the meditation practice is the heart of the Buddhist practice. And also like things like sila, keeping the five precepts, it helps us to live a virtual lifestyle where we live a wholesome day-to-day life, every moment, where we don't do anything that will hurt ourselves and hurt other people. So we become quite harmless. So when when you meet a wise person, a kind person, a virtuous person, you notice you feel safe, because a person that have good sila will not do anything to harm themselves and to harm other people. That's why the five precepts is very important. So when we keep it, we bring happiness to ourselves and to other people. Yeah. And without sila, virtue, and developing the mind through meditation, then wisdom will not arise. So when wisdom arises, we see things more clearly. We see the hurt that arises in people and arises in ourselves. And we learn to live this lifestyle more skillfully. And more peacefully. So when we do that, we find that we walk in this earth with a lot of kindness, compassion, and wisdom. Okay, so I guess we can start meditation. So we just turn off the light. Thank you. So this instruction is for the new people here. So it's good to learn a bit of basic meditation. So sometimes when I remember when I was a lay person, during my lunch time, I would sit and meditate, yeah, 4 by 10 minutes, yeah, at work. And it actually refreshed my mind. Okay. So just sit down. Relax. Try to sit nice and comfortable. So move your body around. So it's just nice and comfortable. Now, slowly bring your awareness to your front of your face and just breathe in 3 deep breaths. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in. Breathe out, relax, 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 and just breathe normally. Okay, so bring your awareness to your face and just relax your face. Relax, relax, relax. Now bring your awareness to your back of your neck and just relax, relax your neck, relax, relax, relax. Gently bring your awareness to your chest and just relax your chest. Relax, relax, relax. Now just bring your awareness to your right and your left shoulders. Sometimes we find that especially our shoulders and our back is quite stiff. So if you can just relax him as much as possible, that'd be good. Relax, relax, relax. Especially when you have a busy day, sometimes we find that our back and the arm can be quite tense. So it's good to just relax your arm as much as possible. Relax your back. Relax, relax, relax. Okay, now bring your awareness to your right and your left arm. Just relax them. Relax, relax, relax your arm. Relax your fingers. Relax. Bring your awareness to your back. Just relax your back. Back should not be too straight or too rigid. Nice and comfortable. Just relax your back. Relax. 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 Bring your awareness down to your lower back, where you're sitting on the seat. Just relax your lower back. Relax. 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 gently bring your awareness to your right foot and right leg, and try and relax your right foot and right leg as much as possible. Relax. And if you need to move it, please move your legs. Make it as comfortable as possible. Relax your leg. Relax your right leg. Relax. Now, gently bring your awareness to your left leg. And just relax your legs. Relax your foot. Relax your toes. Body relaxer. Slowly bring awareness back to your face. Yep. And just breathe normally. The importance of the awareness of the body is to feel the body and to relax the body. So any part of the body that is tense or painful is to make it as comfortable as possible. But sometimes when we work, when we do some other things, it can be a lot of tension built on the body. So the body scanning is quite important. is to notice the part of our body that's quite tense and learn to relax it as much as possible. Relax the body. The body relaxer. Just bring awareness back to the breathing and just breathe normally. Breathe in peace, breathe out relax. Breathe in peace, breathe out relax. Breathe in calm. Breathe out, letting go. mind is wandering, sometimes you just remind yourself that the mind wanders a bit because of the busy lifestyle that we live in. But this now is the time to let go and learn to be at peace and let things go for this moment. So we meditate to let things go and let it be. Responsibility. calm and still mind is a happy mind. The more we can let things go and still the mind, the more happier we become and the more peaceful we are. we will finish the meditation in a few minutes. So just see how much you can relax and let go as much as possible. You need to sometimes just move your body and just totally relax before come on meditation. Ring the gong 3 times and just gently come out meditation. Sometimes if we are quite tired, we can fall asleep when we sit to meditate.
My phone system is not working.
It's not working. Okay, I will speak louder. Even myself, if I'm working a lot, and if I go back and meditate, sometimes I will fall asleep. So it's quite normal. If you're tired, your mind will naturally incline towards having a quick nap. That's fine, because sometimes when I got a lot of duties and responsibility up in Newbury, then if I'm tired, I'll have a nap first. So after the nap, then when the energy is back, when my body don't feel so tired, then it's easier to meditate. So if you do fall asleep, it's fine, because sometimes we just so tired from work, from work, from responsibility, from planning, from thinking too much, and from worrying. Sometimes we do get quite mentally drained. So when we drain ourselves too much, it's good to basically just have a quick nap. And sometimes there was a yogi in one of the monastery in Burma, and he will
try and sit and practice and meditate, but he was so intense that he can't meditate, can't watch the breath for a moment. So the meditation teacher told him to basically just sleep. Just sleep until you get so sick of sleeping. So he would sleep for like days after days, week after week. I think after like 2 weeks of sleeping, then when he sat down to meditate, he was so fed up of sleeping during the in the retreat center. So when he sat down and meditate, then he finally got some good meditation. So sometimes if we're tired, we just need to have a rest. When I first went to the monastery stay, in the beginning I used to force myself to sit and meditate for 1 or 2 hours or 4 hours. I found that I wasn't getting good results. So I gave up one time, and all I did was just sleep and sleep, work and sleep in the morning, sleep in the afternoon. After sleeping for like 3 days, 5 days, then when I sat and meditate, it was easy. I can wash the breath more easily, and the mind become very calm easily. But sometimes when we so tired and mentally drained, we need to really rest the body and rest the mind. So when we rest the body and rest the mind, then the calm and the peace will naturally come back. I think these days people need to meditate more because people are more busy than ever before, especially with the internet and smartphone. Especially when I go back home, I see my family and friends, they're on their smartphone all the time. So at the monastery now we have internet at the retreat center, and I tend to check my email once in a while in terms of work, especially now supporting Newbury Monastery and the community. So I will spend more time using my device more often. So after a while, I find that I start to almost become like my friends and my family, by spending my hours on the internet, checking things out, researching. And I find that the more I spend on the device, it can hinder the mind quite often, because the mind will wander quite often into like just thinking about plans, activities, and to do with the world. The problem with the world is endless. There's no end to the world and the problems. And sometimes we find that if we get stuck into too many politics with the world, it can be quite depressing. So sometimes it's good to turn off the device and just put it away, and just find some time to yourself. The good thing about the monastery, I find that it is quite a peaceful place if we use it wisely. As a forest monk, our main practice is to live simply and to renounce and to let things go. The more we let things go, the more free we become. Before that, when I first joined the monastery, the first few years, I found it was very boring. The more I let go, the more bored I became. So when I started to go to Victoria to support that monastery, I found I became more busy with work. And then sometimes I realized, I remember the time that I was peaceful was usually in meditation. So when I was overworked with work and burden, and especially when the senior monk left and resigned, then later on disrobed. So I took over as the acting senior monk, and had to deal with the problems, the complaints of the community, and also lay people coming in with their problems and stress. Sometimes I find that if I spend too much time helping other people, I can basically get too caught up with the duties of the monastery, and listen to people's problems and issues. And if I take it back to to my kuti and my room, it can affect my mental well-being. So I find that sometimes you can take a lot in, but at the end of the day, you have to basically let it go. So the more you let go, the more happier, the more free you become. So now I really value the peaceful time at Bodhiyana, and or the quiet time in my kuti. I never really value that much because I was bored. Yep. But now, having more responsibility and becoming more senior, I tend to value that. So these days I realize how important to develop that peaceful mind state. Because when things are tougher, then you really have to learn how to practice and let things go. Yep. Because sometimes if we don't let things go, we can carry the emotion in our heart, in our mind, and we carry too much, then we can find that we slowly, like mentally, slowly fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So able to have the ability just to still to calm the mind down. So that when the mind is calm and still, it doesn't wander so much. We can see things more clearly with a mind that's more clear. So sometimes it's not the thoughts that's the problem. It's the emotion that we get caught up with thinking too much. Because sometimes we think that the more we think, the more we can see a solution. But the solution is quite simple. The more we calm and still the mind, the answer will come more clearly. So with a calm and still mind, we can see things more clearly. Okay. So, is there any questions? Please.
Hindrances.
Yes.
Can you please tell us about the hindrances?
Hindrances. Okay, so there's five hindrances. So the main first hindrance is greed, because greed is we're always looking for something better, and we're looking for something that I think one thing is normal. We all want the best for everything, but sometimes when there's no end to our wanting, it can become a obsession where we can waste a lot of time chasing after things that sometimes will lead to more problems than solution. So what I mean by that is sometimes if in a monastery, sometimes thinking, oh, wouldn't that be great if we have a newer vehicle in the monastery? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a new vehicle, there's more features, it's more safer, and it's more reliable. Because in the monastery, we get donated a lot of second-hand old vehicles. So we have about maybe six vehicles now that's been donated to the monastery. Yeah? And they're about 15 to 25 years old. So I tend to spend a lot of time maintaining those vehicles to keep them going the roller. And our drivers, they're not fully mindful all the time, because our drivers, they are trained to let go. So they sit down and meditate the mind, then their mind become right peaceful. Then when they go out driving, they become a bit slow. They're not aware, and sometimes you get in the accident. So when that happens, sometimes myself and Amandus is the long-term anti-gericular. So at the moment, me and Amandus is fixing one of the Hondas at the moment. And sometimes we wonder if we can get a newer vehicle with cameras in the back and fences, it might avoid the accident. But sometimes I think about it, sometimes if we do that, it end up we have to raise more money. And when you have a newer vehicle, you tend to worry a bit more. So with an old vehicle, it's not too bad. It does not cost too much. So when we have a bad accident, we just scrap the vehicle. Yeah. So sometimes not wanting too much is very important. So be content with little, not too demanding. So as for forest monk, we try to accept what is given to us. But the community is about, this Vasa was up to 28 monastic, say in the monastery. Yeah. So there's more driving. Yeah. So if there's more driving, more monastic, yeah, we need more vehicles. Yep. So sometimes we're just happy. If anyone give us an old car, we accept it. If someone gives us a newer car, we also accept it. So we try not to be too demanding. Yeah. So that's one of the hindrances, is greed. So sometimes excess greed is not very good, because with too much greed, we're never happy. We're always looking for something better. Even myself, sometimes I wish that our Newbury Monastery was a bit further away. It's in the middle of the forest, so we don't have too many lay people coming. I can live more peacefully. But sometimes you just have to accept things for the way they are. And the second hindrance is also anger. Sometimes I told myself, when things are not doing so well, I'll complain to myself, why me? Why don't a senior monk go and take care of Newbury Monastery? Why ask me to take care of the monastery? I'm only a junior monk. When I took over the monastery, I have 4 wasa. Should be someone have 20 wasa. But sometimes I think, it's okay, I mean, it is a new monastery in the beginning. I remember Ajahn Brown, when he was starting, himself and Ajahn Jagaro, when he was building Bodhiana Monastery, there was so little support. Hardly anyone came to offer dana. And Ajahn was saying that some days Ajahn Jagaro and himself will not have any dana, so they won't have any lunch at all. So in Newbury Monastery, some days we don't have anyone come over to offer dana. But luckily we have some lay people staying, so they will cook very simply. So I'm pretty happy, just eating simply. But in Bodhiana, some days it's like a buffet. We have up to like 50 to 80 dishes a day in the weekend. And in Newbury, sometimes what we have is just recycled food that's been put in the freezer, and we just heat it up. And because the senior nun is quite frugal, so she would sometimes the next day I see, that's okay, I don't mind having that again. Then second day I see the same dish again. Then the third day I say, I think it's a bit overboard, that we cannot recycle the food too many times. So I tend to encourage her to basically get rid of the food by the third day. Because she's come from a simple background. She would say old school. So the older nuns, they're kind of frugal. So they try not to waste things as much as possible. So sometimes I just got to learn to don't complain too much, and don't have too much fault finding. Because if I'm too fault finding, I always find fault with everything. With the monastery, with the monastic, with the nuns, with the monks. Because having a new monastery, we have a lot of visiting monastic. They come in and visit. And some of them, they are city monks. They are good monks. But sometimes city monks, they do use money. And sometimes when they come into the monastery, we notice because they tend to associate with the lay people a lot, so we notice they're a bit more we say not as simple as a monastic, the forest monk. Because a forest monk, we are trained to give up as much as possible, to have a meal a day, simple robe, medicine, and a roof over our head. With the city monks, when they come in, sometimes we find that they're very smart. They know a lot. And sometimes they come in with their latest iPhone. And when I see that, sometimes I shake my head. I say, oh no, that costs about $1,000. That's not right. And sometimes we have other monks from other tradition, and they wear like very expensive watch. And I go, oh, that, I told myself, they are good monastic. They're doing a good job. I need to be less negative and fault-finding. Because who knows, sometimes they're good teachers. Sometimes these monastics say that the lay people really want them to have the best of everything. So it's not their fault. Sometimes they're just given good requisite, and you find that they can't really refuse. But sometimes for myself, someone will give me something, and I say no, I don't need it. I got everything in the monastery. Then later on, they'll give it to my driver, and the driver will give it to me. And I go, oh, since I have it, it's okay. If I can use it, I use it. If I don't use it, if it's not required, then I'll give it away. Because as for forest monk, we try and live simply. We try not to have too much. Because sometimes, if we have too much fine requisite, it's not inspiring to our supporters. Because we try and live as simple as possible. The other hindrance is restlessness. Sometimes we can be quite restless, especially if we're very busy. So sometimes I find that if I'm too involved with too many duties and responsibilities, my mind can wander into too much duties. Because sometimes when we have too much duties and responsibilities, we find it's a bit hard to let it go and to drop it. So that's why sometimes it's good for the monastic to not stay in the monastery for too long. But the Buddha say the benefit of staying in different monastery and not staying in one place too long is we don't pick up too much responsibility and duties, become very good at our tasks. So sometimes when we're very good at our tasks, we tend to be very competent at what we're doing in the monastery. So in Bodhiyana, I'm basically my profession is I'm a mechanic, so I fix cars. So because I'm so good at fixing cars, that's one reason why we got a fleet of vehicles now, up to 11 vehicles. Some of them are very old vehicles, but because I have a lot of time, it's very time to fix it. So the more I can maintain the vehicles, the longer they last. So it reached a point where I realized sometimes I need to let go of the vehicles and just go to another monastery and have a break and don't get too caught up with fixing vehicles. Because if I keep on maintaining the vehicles, then our fleet of vehicles is getting larger and larger. Because when I first arrived at Bodhiyana, we only have 3 vehicles. But now we have 11 vehicles. And because I'm quite good at fixing the vehicles. So that's why they manage to last for so long. Also, I have to be careful too, because I find that the longer I stay in Newbury Monastery, I become very involved with work. When I get involved with so much work and responsibility, when I go back, it's very hard for me to let go of my duties and my responsibility. If I can let it go, then my mind can become quite restless. Where if I go out, I look at all I see is just work that needs to be done in the monastery, problems that need to be solved, things to fix, people to basically coach and advise them. So sometimes that's one reason why I will stay in Bodhiyana and Newbury for 6 months each year. So that way, I don't get caught up with the work and responsibility. Because I do remind myself, I'm only a junior monk, I'm not a senior monk. Because in the monastery, where you have monks and nuns living together, and a new building monastery, usually the Buddha say, to support a community that size, you require to have 20 wasa. So when I first went there, I only have 4 wasa. So I was a very junior monk. Because it's a new monastery, no one's not going to come. No one's going to come over and support that place or take any responsibility. So normally that's what happens. When the monastery is built and all the hard work is done, then you have everyone that want to come in and stay there. So even I remember Ajahn Brahm was saying that in the beginning, Ajahn was saying that he didn't know that Bodhiyana Monastery will survive because the support was so little and it's a lot of hard work. But now it's built and we have a lot of kutis, and the monastery is just overflowing with monastic. And because the monastery is so comfortable, we have so much support, how do anyone want to leave the monastery at all? So sometimes it's good for me. So one reason for me leaving Bodhiyana Monastery is I don't get too attached to basically having a good time, because greed is also wanting things easier. So when I'm in an easy environment, I can become quite relaxed, become quite comfortable. Sometimes a bit of suffering is good for the practice. So when there's a bit of suffering, then I know that I need to learn to let go. Sometimes not too much suffering. Sometimes when there's too much suffering, you can overwhelm the mind. So sometimes it's good to have a break. So it's good to pace oneself. Because the reason why I say that is sometimes in Bodhiyana, Dhammasara, Santi Monastery, also Wat Bodhidharma, like the first abbot and abbess, they started those monasteries. Some of them are not in robe anymore. Or some of them basically become quite sick because they overwork and burn out. So I'm very aware of that. So I have to basically take care of my own mental well-being. So I try not to overwork, because sometimes when we got too much responsibility, especially if we're not fully enlightened yet, the restlessness will come out. And also one of the hindrances is doubt. Sometimes we have to practice. We have to get our meditation deep enough to remove the doubt. If there's too much doubt, sometimes it can be a hindrance to the practice. So that's why a person that should lead a monastery should be someone that's enlightened. So when the person they have good practice and enlightened, they don't have any more doubt. When there's no doubt, he knows the path to freedom and the path to peace. But the worst thing is if you're still stuck in the mud, stuck with defilements and sinking in the mud, it's very hard to pull the next person that's stuck in the mud out of the defilements. So someone that's enlightened is free from the attachment to the defilements and the hindrances. So he or she can pull the person out from the mud easily. Okay, so is there any more questions? Anyone like to ask me any questions? Please.
How do you find Nirvana again once you've lost it before, once you've found it?
Usually for what we heard from other monastic, and also because Nirvana is a state of complete stillness, freedom, and seeing the way of out of suffering. So that state is very hard for a monastic to develop. Sometimes it takes that monastic 20 years or their whole life, even a few lifetimes to see Nibbana. But if a person see Nibbana, then you only have the maximum 7 more rebirths, then he does not come back to this world. For a monastic, if someone that realizes Nibbana, they not really, due to our rules, we can't talk about Nibbana to anyone at all, but we can talk from the text and the Buddhist teaching. So Nibbana is basically seeing the end of suffering and the way of suffering, and to understand non-self. As long as there's a self, there is suffering. When there's no self, there's there's no suffering. Because if there's an I, it's my suffering, it's my problem, it's my responsibility. If there's no my and there's no I, there's no problem. So it's very deep, hard understanding. Yeah? But with deep meditation and stillness of the mind, then we see there's actually there's no one there. Yep. So if we think there's someone there, then there's some work, and there's some duties, and there's some suffering, there's someone inside here to suffer. So it's like my problem. So if there's no one there, there's no problem. So Nibbana is something very few monastics can see that.
Well, luckily I think I've reached it possibly, but I haven't been able to get back there, and I was only for like a second. I'd love to get back there, but it doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah.
Or be able to go there.
You see, if someone sees Nibbana, it's like a big explosion in that person's understanding of dukkha and suffering. It's like a person being hit by lightning. It's like they completely blown away, and they realize that existence is suffering. And not to exist, it's like a lot of freedom and happiness. So when the person sees Nirvana, they don't really want to hang around as a lay person anymore. But they see that these five senses and the mind it's not worth holding on to. It's like the more we hold on to it, the more we suffer. So that's why when a person is enlightened, reach the first stage, normally that person just want to live quietly or go and join the monastery. He's not interested in the worldly pleasures anymore. But sometimes, as a lay person, when we practice, when the mind is very still and very peaceful, it's almost a taste of Nibbana. We see that is peace, and that's the way to happiness. But to really break through, to understand oneself, is something very very deep. So once a person sees Nibbana, they'll try and get out as soon as possible. They don't hang around. And a person that understands oneself, they become very calm and very peaceful in their heart, in their mind. When things go wrong, they don't carry on too much. They just let things be. So Nibbana is very, very hard to understand. Maybe the best person to talk to is probably Ajahn Brown, Ajahn Brahmadi, because they have a better understanding on the suttas. I think Ajahn Brown is a good teacher. He has very good deep meditation. So he probably give a better description than me. Because for myself, I'm still quite junior. I still got a long way to practice. But I keep on trying. Because I told myself, when I did ordain, if I can lessen my defilements as less as possible, and develop the wholesome mental state, that's good enough for me. So one step at a time. Okay, thank you. So anyone have any more questions?
Maybe.
Thank you. Thank you.